Chapter 19. Tiger Comes to Call. Days passed with no sign of Croc. He continued pursuing, not knowing that what he pursued was behind him. Sooner or later he would realise the truth, and would lie in ambush for the arrival of the Ark. Hal kept a constant lookout. He kept on taking on new passengers, most of them small. A gorgeous scarlet ibis, a roseate spoonbill, a golden canure, a cock of the rock, and a curacao that soon became a pet. But Hal was dissatisfied. "These things are all right, but we've just got to get an anaconda. And a tiger." He took his problem to Aqua. He had come to rely more and more upon the faithful young Indian. During the long hours on deck, Aqua had been teaching the two boys the lingua general, which means general language. Each Amazon tribe has its own language, but there's also a general language known to Indians throughout the great Amazon basin. Any explorer should be acquainted with it, since many Indians do not speak Portuguese, and almost none of them knew English. "I think you will get El Tigre soon," Aqua said. "We are coming now into Tiger Country." "I can never get this quite straight," complained Roger. "Is it a tiger or is it a jaguar?" "Jaguar is the literary name for it," Hal admitted. "But you won't find anybody down here calling it that. South Americans call it a tiger, and since it's a South American beast, I suppose they have a right to name it. I'll call it a tiger too. No matter what we call it, I want one."
"You say it's South American," Roger objected. "But we heard of one in Arizona."
"Yes, and there are plenty of them in Mexico, but they're different. They're small. They seldom weigh over 15 stone. These run up to 30. The Mexican animals are dark coloured. These are a bright yellow with black markings. Of course the mark isn't a stripe, it's sort of a broken ring. The Mexican variety will run away from trouble if it can. These down here don't hesitate to charge. And they're very fierce and strong. I've just been reading here what Sasha Simiel says about them. He says that a South American tiger can kill an African lion."
"Isn't he the fellow they call the Tiger Man?"
"Yes. The big cattle ranches employ him. The tigers are hard on cattle. One ranch loses 3,000 cattle a year to the tigers. Simiel fights with a spear. He thinks it's more reliable than a gun, because it takes a lot of shots to kill a tiger. Even when you shoot a tiger through the heart, it may continue its charge and kill you before it dies."
"I'll enjoy seeing you tackle a tiger with a spear," Roger grinned.
"I'm afraid you won't have that pleasure. That's an old Indian custom. I'll leave that to Aqua. But I hope it won't be necessary. We want to capture one alive, not dead."
Tigers were certainly becoming more common. Their roars at night were more frequent. The terrifying thing about the roar of a tiger was that it seemed to be very close at hand, even if the animal were 2 or 3 miles away. The roar began with a series of coughs that came faster and faster and louder until they turned into a thunder that seemed to shake the woods. Certainly it shook the nerves of anybody listening. Then the cry died away and ended in a few grunting growls. When it was all finished, the air seemed to be still vibrating. You could tell roughly how near the animal was by the grunts at the end of its roar. "If you cannot hear those grunts, he is far away," Aqua said. "If you can hear them, watch out, he is close." The roar, with its rise and fall, had the eerie effect of a siren. It was hard to sleep through it. Travelling was now done mostly by day, and hammocks were slung on shore at night. A campfire was kept burning all night. Hal was never quite sure of this fire. Did it keep animals off or attract them? Perhaps it frightened the more timid ones, but one night he looked from his hammock to see a great yellow and black head not 20 feet from him. The tiger did not see him, but was gazing with evident curiosity at the fire, its big yellow eyes gleaming in the light. Presently the animal lay down full length, for all the world like a cat by the hearth, its enormous jaws opened in a gigantic cat yawn. Hal was quite unprepared for this visit. He had no cage ready, no net, and his men were asleep. Some on shore and some on the Monteria. Those who did not mind have baby boas crawling over them were on the boat. If he called to the men, the animal would be alarmed. His gun lay beside him, but he could not bring himself to use it. He did not want to kill the superb beast. On the other hand, he did not care to go to sleep within 20 feet of a tiger, and the tiger seemed to have no notion of leaving. Excuse me. One of the Indians rose to put more wood on the fire. The tiger sat up on its haunches and watched the proceedings with interest. Hal hardly dared breathe. Softly he took up his Savage and aimed, but did not fire. One bullet would only change a placid cat into a raging devil. At least he hoped the cat was placid. He told himself that animals, even the most savage ones, rarely attack men unless they were cornered or wounded. But he knew that this did not quite hold true of the jaguar. There were too many cases of man-eating on record. Lumberjacks and rubber gatherers were frequently killed by tigers. A sailor escaped but left an arm behind him. Three padre were caught in a church. Two were killed and the other got away. In the Buenos Aires Zoo was a tiger that had taken three lives. Then there was the Argentine scientist whose camp was visited every night by a tiger that had taken a fancy to the dried beef. When it was hung out of reach, the disappointed tiger attacked the man himself, smashing his skull with one crunch of his jaw. There were dozens of other cases Hal had read of, but he could not remember them now. He did recall only too clearly one reported by the naturalist Azara. Six men went to sleep around a campfire. In the morning, four of them awoke and found the bodies of the other two that had been dragged some distance into the jungle and half devoured. The Indian came around between the fire and the tiger. Hal's finger fondled the trigger. He could feel the cold sweat on his forehead. The tiger stretched out its nose as if sniffing. Would this brown, two-legged creature make a good meal or not? But it did not move. Suddenly, back in the brush, there came the high whinny of a tapir. Instantly, the tiger's great head swung around in that direction. It rose and padded off without a sound. Presently, out of the jungle came a terrific noise. The shrill screeching of the tapir and the thundering roar of the Forest King. Everyone in camp woke up with a start. Roger said with an unsteady voice, "Gee, I'm glad we have a fire. That really does keep them off." Hal didn't choose to worry his brother by telling him what he had seen. In 5 minutes, Roger was asleep again, but Hal kept watch the rest of the night. In the morning, he found the tracks. Each footprint was as big as a soup plate. It was almost perfectly round. The spaces between the toes were even and there were no sign of claws. The jaguar keeps them drawn well back as he walks. There was nothing about the print to suggest that it had been made by a savage beast. It was as soft and smooth as if someone had pressed a velvet pad into the dirt. Hal remarked about this to Aqua. "The tigre's paw is soft," Aqua said, "but strong. Just one blow from it will kill an ox." But with Aqua's help, Hal and Roger followed the trail back into the jungle. They came at last to the spot where the struggle between the tapir and tiger had evidently taken place. The grass was trampled, earth torn up, and a underbrush broken. But there was no carcass of a dead tapir. Hal was disappointed. He had hoped to capture the tigre here, When the big cat kills a large animal, it usually eats what it can, leaves the carcass for some hours, and returns to eat again. The wily hunter will be there with his gun or his cage at the time of the second visit. But this time the tiger had been more wily than the hunter. "Look at the path," cried Roger. "There must be Indians." "No Indians," said Aqua. "The tiger made this path." "But it's as wide as three tigers." "He was dragging the tapir." Hal stared. It was hard to believe. Out of the trampled arena led what was almost a road, 3 or 4 feet wide, with every bit of underbrush flattened as if a steamroller had passed over it. "How could a jaguar drag a tapir?" he marvelled. "It's as heavy as a cow." There was no doubt about it. The largest of South American wild animals had been dragged through virgin forest that even a man with a machete and no burden would have had trouble in penetrating. They followed the trail. In some places it was more of a tunnel than a path, since the tiger did not stand more than 3 feet high. They stooped and scrambled through. At any moment they expected to come upon the carcass, and perhaps the tiger. But the trail went on for more than a mile. Then it came out on the bank of the Amazon. It continued to the water's edge, and that was all. Hal looked across the river. It was several miles wide. His respect for the jaguar grew. "I didn't know it could swim," said Roger. "Better than you can. The jaguar loves the water. Perhaps his wife and kids live on the other side and he wanted them to share his meal. But think of swimming all that distance pulling something twice as heavy as himself." But Hal remembered the account in one of his manuals of a jaguar that killed a horse and swam with it across the river, and the report by the famous Brazilian General Rondon of a horse that was dragged a mile through heavy brush to a waterhole where the jaguar might enjoy drinks with his meal. The cleverness of the animal was almost equal to its strength. It could have gone straight to the river past the camp, but took a roundabout route to avoid any risk of losing its prize. On the way back to camp, Aqua showed the boys a strange sight. A tiger's manicure parlour. It was a large tree at a height of about 6 or 7 feet above the ground, with deep scars and scratches made by the claws of jaguars. This was the way, Aqua explained, that they sharpened their claws. They behaved just like house cats, standing on their hind feet up against the tree. They dragged their claws repeatedly through the bark. Where their breasts rubbed the tree, it was worn smooth.